Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about creating jobs in the energy industry right here in Wisconsin. Our guest today, John Greenler. John directs education and outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. John, great to have you back.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Larry.
And with us as well, Gary Radloff, back once again, a researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, directs the Midwest Energy Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Energy Institute. And Gary, great to have you back.
Pleasure to be here. Look forward to it.
So we're going to talk about jobs in the energy industry. You may be interested in a job in that area. What questions do you have about the energy economy? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Certainly love to hear from you. John, back to you for just a minute. Let's talk about the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell us about
those. Yeah, so, lots of good things happening, lots of good news. As we were discussing, I think, a little bit ago, with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, we've been really fortunate to receive another 5 years of funding from the Department of Energy, and our focus on the research continues to evolve. We're really now very much looking at, the dedicated bioenergy crops that we can be growing on marginal lands on our agricultural landscape, so not competing with growing food or feed for livestock, so for example, not corn grain for ethanol, but crops more like, as we discussed, switchgrass and similar, and then correspondingly in terms of the fuels, we've really put our focus on not ethanol to replace gasoline, but instead really looking towards the future and how do we come up with more sustainable, cleaner alternatives for both things like biodiesel, diesel. Mm-hmm. And jet fuel. I think we recognize that, in transportation as we look forward, our cars will increasingly be electric vehicles, electrified or hybrids or similar. So, but trying to really bring more sustainability to the trucking industry and commercial flight is really important. And then also looking more at, what are some of the other products that we can be developing in parallel from that, from those biomass materials that can kind of further enhance that bioeconomy in general.
Yeah, so lots going on there.
Lots happening.
And Gary Radloff, talk about your role as director of the Midwest Energy Policy Analysis for the Energy Institute.
Well, I'm monitoring and tracking policy developments throughout the United States and really globally, but focusing in on the Midwest and Wisconsin. Obviously, the energy sector, particularly the electrical energy sector, is going through a major transition with more renewables, more distributed energy resources. And so that means we have to update our policies all the time. And that's been my focus over the last few years.
And there's some research, a new study out that talks a little bit about jobs and the energy industry. Tell us who was behind that and what it was about.
Well, it was a fun project. We were approached by an organization called the American Jobs Project. They're a California-based research facility, and they always look for local partners when they do a state report. And so they wanted to look at the state of Wisconsin, see what the challenges and opportunities were to create an advanced energy economy, which is looking at all of the new energy technologies that have been developed, microgrids, energy storage, smart grid systems, see what in Wisconsin is both a strength and where are their challenges. And then they did some modeling around the job opportunity in that area. So that was the focus of the report.
And the results, what did we get for results?
Well, what they looked at, they really picked up on the fact that the state is already a leader in what we call the energy power and control sector, which means primarily there's a lot of manufacturing in Wisconsin of the supportive technologies in the energy system. And then they said, well, what's unique about that and where are the opportunities? And so they looked at a subset of that energy power and control sector in sensors and controls and said, Wisconsin, if you're smart, take a look at those sensors and control products and job opportunities and really cultivate that, because as we develop all of these so-called smart things, smart water heaters, smart thermostats, smart grids, smart buildings, you really need these sensors and controls to make those systems work, because the sensors are the systems that collect and process data, and then the controls sort of take that process data and then tell you how to manage the energy system. So it's a growing global market and also a local market.
And we have companies, actually quite a few companies already in that business, do we not?
Oh, absolutely. We, for the study, we identified over 200 companies in the supply chain. Obviously, names that people know are Johnson Controls, Rockwell Automation, Regal Beloit, A.O. Smith, Eaton Cooper Power Systems, big companies in the global market, but again, still local companies in the state.
Mm-hmm. So the opportunities are out there.
Yes, absolutely. What we found with the report, and we did some modeling where we looked at a whole variety of existing data and then obviously trends, and then you modeled the trends. We projected that if with some supportive policy, and we can talk about that separately, that Wisconsin's sensors and control sector could support an annual average growth of 44,000 jobs through 2030, which was the modeling point. So
that's a lot of jobs.
Yeah, it's significant, and it really goes beyond the numbers game. You know, sometimes, you know, these reports come out and talk about, you know, this many jobs can be created or that many jobs. But what I think is important as well is the quality of the jobs. These are really good paying jobs, you know, life-sustaining jobs if people want to go into them. So that's where I think it's a very exciting report and an exciting opportunity.
So the sensors themselves, just so I understand this, they can sense changes in what, weather, John?
Well, the obvious things, you know, we think about temperature is really an obvious one. But one that I think that is interesting, which, you know, which is really specific, for example, to Wisconsin, is we really have a growing biogas industry here in Wisconsin. You know, and kind of the first generation of that biogas technology was generating, you know, electricity, taking that biogas and using it in generators. But increasingly, I think they're seeing the opportunity of taking that biogas, being able to clean it up and, you know, and put it into our gas pipelines for a wide array of different uses. But in doing that, we really need to make sure that that gas is of, you know, of a high quality. And there are actually sensors available to, you know, essentially be continuously monitoring for all sorts of potential types of contaminants that you wouldn't want to have, you know, in a gas line. And so it's really diversifying quite rapidly, and, you know, not immediately obvious when we think about a lot of our energy systems, but really mission critical to kind of move into a lot of these advanced and clean energy technologies.
I would say, you know, a sensor, for example, might be just at the home level, might be something, or at the business level, mm-hmm. I guess. If you had a solar unit, for example, the sensors could move the panels or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're starting to see these sensors and controls really embedded into all the new technologies. And so for, you know, in the home, whether it's if you have a solar panel or even if you don't, maybe you're going to put in, again, the term they use is smart thermostats. Mm-hmm. Well, these thermostats not only can adjust the house for temperature and all the obvious things, but where it starts to get interesting is the integration of the solar panel and the smart thermostat system, where it suddenly can become almost like a home energy management system. And you know, where this ultimately could take us is you might actually produce more energy than your home needs, so you want to sell it onto the marketplace. Well, these smart systems then can be plugged into the marketplace and tell you even when to sell that energy. So it starts to get really interesting where the technology takes us.
Yeah, you know, and correspondingly, there's a lot of it feeds into kind of what are known as kind of demand side technologies as well. It's clear, I think, to everybody in the clean energy industry that we need to be a lot more efficient with the energy that we're utilizing, and so, you know, being able to be much more resilient and adaptive in terms of how we use electricity. Yeah, for the homeowner, is, you know, as Gary was saying, these smart thermostats are a big step forward. So some people probably, or maybe even have a Nest thermostat unit, for example, and you can control that, you know, via your phone, over the internet. And once again, it's like, well, you know, normally I'm home at 6, but I'm not going to be home to 11. I can just quickly tell my thermostat to, you know, keep my temperature set at kind of a, you know, a background level. And so just being able to be more adaptive like that can make a really big difference. So those kinds of controls and the corresponding sensors to know what's actually happening in real time as well.
So where are we in terms of, you know, sensors and controls? This takes some training and some education of folks. Are we equipped here in the state to be able to do that, Gary?
Well, I think that's part of why we felt the timing for this report was critical. We think, first off, I think we are well positioned with these existing companies that we have. But the what's occurred is the technology is just changing so rapidly. And so you do need to start to retrain your workforce and then create, obviously, a new workforce, because one of the problems in Wisconsin is we have an aging workforce and people are just retiring. I can relate to that personally. And so, you know, we do need to train the next generation of workers. There's a program at the Madison Area Technical College that's very specifically focused on that. So, but we still need to do more, and that's part of what the report is trying to focus people on.
Talking today with Gary Radloff, who is a researcher at the UW-Madison, directs the Midwest Energy Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and John Greenler directs education and outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Join in with your questions or comments. What questions do you have about sensors and controls? You or someone you know work in this sector? What's your experience been? Or what would you like to learn more in terms of education and potential jobs? Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45 today, the weather guys will be back to answer your questions about snow and cold temperatures, among other things. So I hope you stick around for that. In the meantime, we're taking a look at exploring the role of energy and our Wisconsin economy with our two guests, John Greenler and Gary Radloff. Great to have them along. Again, join in with your questions as we talk about jobs in the field. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. I want to go back to the Madison College and the training. John Greenler, talk a little bit more about what's going on in Madison.
Yeah, so I've been on their advisory board for several years now. It's really an exciting project in that, I mean, they have a number of highly qualified instructors themselves and run a number of courses along these lines. But they've actually done some really good work of taking this an additional step. And they've been they did a really good job of getting some funding from the National Science Foundation. So they're now instructors from technical colleges and similar from around the country actually coming to Madison, or they also travel to essentially train, you know, the instructors, to train the trainers, you know, in these new kind of burgeoning technical areas. So, and that's really, there's a lot to indicate that when we look broadly at, you know, what do we need to move these clean energy technologies forward, it's really clear that having the skilled labor is one of the key factors. We really need to get ahead of the game on that, because we can now look at the technology and know that it's going to scale up really rapidly, and we need the people to make that happen. So,
and in terms of the training, are some other tech colleges from Wisconsin involved in this as well?
Yeah, there's a really good network of tech colleges around the state. You know, I've worked with Midstate a fair amount, and they have a whole renewable energy program there as well. So there's a number of colleges here that are really poised and are really kind of trying to grow this area.
David in Oshkosh emailed to say it was that we mentioned that we're in a good place to create 40,000 plus jobs per year until 2030 or so if we put the right policies in place. And I was just about to ask that, but David wanted me to ask it sooner than later. So let's talk about what policies do we need to have put in place. Gary Radloff?
Well, we recommended, I think it ended up being about 13 policies after reviewing 50 or 60 different ones. And we wanted to kind of spread them out. So some of them are very focused on this job training or job preparation sector, but others involve investment and venture capital. Other things involve having something like our existing Focus on Energy program, which is a program focused on energy efficiency, to look at the energy-water nexus as another emerging opportunity. And then finally, some of them actually focus on specific energy policy, such as looking at studying how do we create a smart grid in Wisconsin, do what some people call grid modernization, and really move the state to more of an advanced energy economy. So the interesting thing about this topic is you're looking at both trying to capture a share of a global growing energy market, but also building up your state capacities as well. So again, it was very focused on Wisconsin, but it kept in mind always that what we can do is produce products and services that really go into a global market.
You mentioned the energy water nexus, and that was something that I thought about before the show, and I thought, well, I wonder, maybe you could expand a little on that.
Sure. Obviously, energy uses a lot of water. Just to produce it, at a large energy plant, but also we have obviously water in our home and we use water there, so we can even manage that more efficiently. So, really, one of the things that has occurred in Wisconsin is we actually, because we have the Water Council here, we again have become kind of a national and global leader in that sector. And so we're trying to kind of merge all of that into this study as well. It's not just about energy, the electrical grid. Obviously, that's a big piece of it. But really, how we use water as well, and that's the energy-water nexus. So Wisconsin is well-positioned on that.
Yeah.
And we can add another dimension to that as well. I mean, we can really look at the food-water-energy nexus. And actually, we're really fortunate here in Madison to have a major USDA, United States Department of Agriculture-funded project looking specifically at the dairy industry, because I think we frequently don't realize how much water and how much energy, for example, does go into a dairy operation. And there's lots of opportunities to be more efficient at that in terms of how much energy, but then correspondingly how much water, and also the quality of the water as well is clearly a very timely, important issue here in Wisconsin, and how that relates to the dairy industry, handling manure, et cetera. How can we be taking advantage of that manure, for example, to make things like biogas, at the same time be managing things like, you know, the phosphorus pollution, which is becoming an increasing concern here in the state. So Victor Zavala, who's in the College of Engineering, is the principal investigator in that. It's great to be bringing a big team of faculty to kind of look at how we can, you know, have some win-win opportunities, so to speak, there.
Rick on Facebook says, don't forget Northwest Technical College's utility engineering technology and other related programs. They've been setting up 2+2 with UW. He's been a curriculum advisor there for 9 years. Just need to fill the classrooms. The smarter we make the grid, the more cybersecurity becomes important.
That's great. Excellent. Yeah, thank you.
And I imagine this whole business of cybersecurity probably plays into this whole thing as well, does it not, Gary?
No question. As we develop a more distributed electric grid, you have to be sensitive to the fact that obviously that means there's kind of more access points to the grid. Although it's interesting because some people believe that by having a more distributed grid, you actually have greater security than, just kind of one big generation system. So no question that people are going to be really focusing in on that as an area that we have to address. And again, that means that there are job opportunities out there for people who design software, who are programmers, who are involved in any part of the IT structure.
Let's take some calls now. By the way, you can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Mark in Richland Center. Mark, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. these projects are so worthwhile, and yet the problem that I think that we have is that we haven't actually followed the Chinese model, not the industrial side of things, but the finance side of things. We have basically a private finance mechanism for everything that happens in this country, including our state governments. And so everybody says that they're broke. But the State Bank of North Dakota is a publicly owned bank, and it finances stuff so that when people in North Dakota pay for something, they're basically borrowing from themselves and paying themselves back. So when we look at trying to do these kinds of things, and it doesn't much matter what we're trying to do, if everything has to go through public finance, we're always going to be behind the eight ball. So I would advocate that the guests not only talk about technological things, but talk about financing in a way that makes sense, because public-owned banking is a way to do things. And we should either finance things in the same way that the State Bank of North Dakota does, where the people borrow from themselves and then they pay themselves back, or the federal government could issue the greenback dollar the way Abraham Lincoln did, and nobody is borrowing that money from a bank. The debt service that we have in our state budget right now is at least the second largest expenditure in the state.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mark, for calling. Get comments from both of you. Gary, start with you.
Well, thank you, Mark. Those are some good points. You know, I like to remind people that we still call them public utilities. And so the question is, that's private financing. They're private businesses here in Wisconsin. We have what are called investor-owned utilities. They're monopoly markets. But they still have this public obligation, and we regulate them. So one of the things we can do through public policy is help direct them in their investments to some degree. And could they invest in maybe new technologies or maybe something experimental by the direction of the policymakers, but then also try to help them to protect pursuing these new advanced technologies without putting their shareholders at great risk. Mm-hmm. So that's going to involve some participation from our public utility regulators to say, we're going to maybe carve out a little space for you to look at these new technologies, test them out, see what works best, but maybe not put your investors at great risk or even the electric grid at great risk, because we always have to keep that system in balance of supply-demand. So that's just going to take some creative thinking. So the caller makes a good point that we need maybe some creative thinking around financing and research, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes good sense. Thank you, Mark, for calling. Appreciate it. Drew emailed to ask if you have materials or resources available to high school instructors to foster energy awareness and so forth.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a great question for, you know, given that I direct education programs, that's one I really appreciate. Yeah, and the good news is actually we have a really deep set of materials that are available for teachers to utilize in their classroom, both, you know, materials for the students, but then a lot of background materials for the teachers as well. And you can access those materials either through the Energy Institute website, which is energy.wisc.edu or glbrc.org. And you'll see, you know, just follow the link either for education and or outreach, and you'll find materials for educators. So, yes, I think there's over 60 different really well-honed materials out there. So thank you very much.
Sort of on the broader level, Matt in Wausau emailed to say he thinks we've nationally and even statewide taken a step backwards relative to renewable energy in America as well as Wisconsin. He hopes we can all agree that options other than oil and coal are necessary moving forward. Gary, comment.
Well, you know, he's correct. Certainly in my 25-plus years of working in public policy, we know the pendulum swings back and forth from different ideologies, and certainly in the energy space, there's always some differences of opinion of how we should proceed. But what I like to remind people is technology just sort of ignores that. And with all of these new advanced energy technologies, The term of art is distributed energy resources, things like energy storage, microgrids, smart water heaters, smart thermostats, all of those that kind of fall under that umbrella. The technology just keeps changing. We've seen so much change just in the last 5 years, and that's not going to stop because now there's an interest in more energy efficiency, cleaner energy generation. And I think that sort of ultimately overcomes the policy debate and pushes renewable energy, I use the term advanced energy, but renewable energy forward, even in the political shifts. And policymakers will always come around when they see a market opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me just sort of on that level that businesses are are kind of ignoring the political thought on this and are just moving ahead, John.
Yeah, there's so much momentum right now, you know, in the industry that we tend to forget that, you know, how strong a drive that is, and it's really building momentum. I think faster than I think most of us, you know, expected. There's some of the more obvious cases, like we think about, Elon Musk with Tesla, for example, and just the ability to scale up and, the efficiency that comes with that kind of scaling, whether it's battery storage or the vehicles themselves. But I think, that's definitely true closer to home as well. There's lots of examples of where that's taking place.
Yeah. So moving forward, what's going to happen sort of as a result of this study, do you think, Gary?
Well, what we've done is we're in this phase now of getting it out in front of the public and talking about what the research found, what, again, are sort of the opportunities or what are the barriers, and really just getting people to understand, what are sensors and controls, why would we want to focus on that technology as a manufacturing opportunity in Wisconsin. And then, it just coincidentally, I noticed we have an election this fall, so now over the summer and fall, we hope people might look at the report, talk about it in terms of the Wisconsin economy, and then have a policy debate once we come back to a legislative cycle in January. That would make it January a year from now.
Yeah, 2019.
Right.
So it's going to happen one way or the other.
I think what's driving it is technology and societal change. As people become aware of these smart thermostats or whatever and start to put them in their homes and realize the power of some of these new technologies. The way I've phrased it in some of my research is it's changing the supply-demand energy paradigm in ways that I don't even think the utilities have completely got their head around. We now, through demand management tools, can really ramp down energy usage. Through efficiency, we can ramp down energy usage. So then that really impacts how much energy generation we build. So I think going forward, we have an opportunity to kind of rethink the energy system.
I was just going to say, I think it's also really exciting right now to look at some of the things that are happening, in Wisconsin and some of our smaller kind of governmental domains as well. So Madison, Dane County as well, for example, are really moving forward towards, clean energy systems and being carbon neutral, et cetera. So, and actually Gary's been quite involved in a number of those projects. So, I think, and that's really, proliferating out. And you start to add that up and it's really significant. It makes a big difference.
And when I was thinking about a kind of vacation I took to Hawaii a couple of years ago with Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, and it was a lot of fun. But that state,
there's
a state that really has decided, we don't have any oil wells and we don't have any coal, so we're going to be a leader in non-traditional energy.
Yeah, some people consider Hawaii the testing ground for this integration of this new technology and also, to some degree, even kind of an energy management paradigm. So, yeah, I think Hawaii is definitely going to be the testing ground. And, but they're motivated just for the points you mentioned. It's, they can't get their energy easily from somewhere else. They have to generate it on site.
Yep. A lot of diesel gets, shipped in.
Right.
It's not cheap.
Let's go to Kathy in Keele, Wisconsin. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for your guest regarding safety of these new technologies. Will we be paying a price in terms of radiation emitted from some of these technologies, for example, smart meters? And how is the safety factor featured into these new technologies?
Yeah, good question. A lot of people are interested in that as well, are concerned.
Yeah, I have to be honest, I haven't heard specifically about a lot of concern with that, but there's no question that with any new technology, you have to test it. So, you know, the critical part there is obviously a lot of, you know, new equipment. The testing actually does occur at that university-based level initially, and then from there, obviously, it goes to businesses who have to further test it. So actually, one of our recommendations is the report is that we look at developing specifically test beds for some of these larger scale energy pieces of equipment, because I mentioned earlier that, you know, with the grid, it always has to stay in balance, supply demand. If it goes out of balance, it crashes. Yeah. You don't want that to happen, obviously. So, you know, no question, any kind of new technology does need to be tested. It's important that we understand, you know, and work out those glitches ahead of time so that we aren't putting them into operation before we completely understand the new technology. But it's always a challenge when technology is coming fast and furious.
You know, a lot of it is just adopting technology, you know, that's already existing. You know, we think about, you know, these smart technologies, you know, a lot of the circuitry, it's very low current, you know, utilizing existing systems such as the internet, or in the case of microgrids, you know, it's really interesting. We, you know, a faculty member who really kind of started that whole area of study, Bob Lasseter, the system there is actually utilizing the existing circuits and just sensing the minute changes that happen when you have a, you know, a new load coming on or a new source of power. So it's really kind of, in many cases, utilizing existing those existing, you know, systems, but just essentially listening to them in a slightly more sophisticated way. So
Yeah, sometimes I have to confess, with the technology, I'm almost a little gee whiz. Because when you talk with somebody like Professor Lasseter about microgrids, and I was just meeting with him this morning, you know, the technology today actually has the ability to learn from the grid. You know, so it's
wow.
That's what they mean by smart technology. Right. For those who remember the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey, you know, where the computer took over the space station. Sometimes that makes you wonder how smart do you want your technology to be. But nonetheless, I think for the long term, there's a lot of societal benefit from technologies that are embedded in a microgrid that actually learn what the grid needs.
What parts of the economy are probably benefiting most from this, do you think, or will benefit most from this?
Well, certainly any big energy user will benefit right away, because I think it has the potential to decrease cost. But there's no question in my mind that all of society will see benefits from this. You know, I think kind of the question that's related to this is sort of how active do you want to be in your energy usage and energy system? You know, I talked about how if you have a solar panel on your home and maybe a smart system within your house, and let's just take it the next step, eventually maybe an energy storage system of some kind. You know, you could really start to become involved in managing not only your home energy, but again, actually shipping energy onto the market. Well, sort of, do you want to be a day trader, if you will, of energy or not? Some people just, you know, want the utility to manage all of that, or somebody else manage all of that. And that makes perfect sense, because we're all busy and have other priorities. But if you wanted to, you could become very active in your energy management at the home level. So we'll see. It's kind of, again, it's this interplay of society and technology that we're seeing changing our world.
You know, and there's also a really interesting broader benefit, you know, that is more indirect, but I think very significant when you look at the big picture perspective, and that is by being more energy efficient and being able to utilize these cleaner energy systems, we have a cleaner environment overall. And so, for example, we have a faculty member here on campus, Jonathan Patz, who's really looked at these broader public health issues. You know, and the analysis when you do the modeling is that by really cleaning up our energy system, it will more than pay for itself just in terms of better public health and fewer people that are, you know, are becoming ill from air pollution related concerns, et cetera. So we may not see it at the meter, but, you know, we'll see it in terms of, you know, health insurance, et cetera. So there's lots of good reasons, lots of ways that we'll benefit.
I was just at a forum this last week. I was kind of master of ceremonies for it, I guess you might say. We were talking about the rural-urban divide and talking about jobs and the need for jobs in some areas of the state where, you know, even though employment's pretty low here in the state right now, there's underemployment in terms of income and so forth. Does this this research and this work hold promise for folks in any area of the state? In terms I'm thinking in terms of jobs now.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, first off, if you have a more distributed system, obviously you can have local energy generation and local energy storage. So therefore, you know, you aren't limited by where you're located in that sense. You could have it on farm, you know, where you have solar panels on the barn, you know, a biogas system if you have dairy animals. That's local generation, literally in your backyard, if you will. But I also think with the jobs themselves, when we looked at this report, and you know, the term of art is supply chain, the entire supply chain in the energy power control sector and then the subsector of sensors and controls is all over the state. And so I do think that, you know, we could be developing smaller manufacturers of components or pieces of the energy system in any community where you would want to locate that. So I you know, obviously you hope that the opportunity and the wealth is spread throughout the state, and that's where policy comes into play to maybe make sure that happens.
Yeah, and there's a really wide range of kind of training requirements, so there's really something there for almost everybody from that level as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of jobs coming online that just require an associate's degree, but there's also, you know, opportunities, you know, that would come from graduate level study as well. So it's quite diversified in that dimension also.
It's really positive. Really a positive thing, and I hope the policy can get there, and I hope it can all happen. I hope you can, Gary, you can come back and talk with us again about this.
I'd love to.
And John Greenler, this is your last time on the show.
It's true.
I know you're going on to other things, but it's been a real pleasure for me. How many years has it been?
I think we started out 10 years ago at the State Fair, Larry, so it's been a great run.
Well, good luck to you in all your future endeavors, and thank you very much for all you've contributed to this program.
Thank you, Larry.
John Greenler, going on to other things right now. He's the Director of Education and Outreach at the moment for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Gary Radloff is the Director of Midwest Energy Policy Analysis for the Wisconsin Energy Institute. And as John said, if you want to learn some more about this and need more educational materials, go to that GLBRC site, John.
GLBRC.org or energy.wisc.edu.
Thank you guys so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking about energy, and there's a lot of energy in our weather and our climate. And a couple of guys with a lot of energy just individually, John Martin and Steve Ackerman. Steve will be coming up next. John will be joining us in maybe 15 minutes or so. But Steve Ackerman coming up right now to talk about climate and weather right here on the Ideas Network.